Authentic Wellness Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 41. And we are at the Authentic Wellness Radio Show. And today we're about to get really, really authentic and talk about transformation and talk about hitting rock bottom and then using that to cause transformation. And for those of you that don't know me, my name is Liana Werner-Gray. And I was born and raised in Australia. I'm the author of The Earth Diet. And so just really quickly, my story was that I hit rock bottom when I was 21. So I moved out of Alice Springs for Brisbane City when I was 18. And I started indulging in junk foods and I became addicted. And I would eat junk foods every single day and I would binge eat. And it was shocking how much food I could actually fit into my body. And then after 5 years of doing that every single day, one day my lymphatic system just exploded and I was in hospital, had a tumor the size of a golf ball in my lymphatic system, had chronic fatigue, glandular fever, and was on the verge of leukemia. Plus I was addicted to junk foods and just felt like my whole life was controlled around foods and I was completely disempowering and really just depressed. And so I used that opportunity to go, you know what, I'm committed to not living like this for the rest of my life. Somehow I'm going to break this vicious cycle. I don't know how, but somehow I will. And so that's how I started the Earth Diet. I wrote, declared all on a blog online because no one knew that I was addicted to junk foods. I would hide it from everyone because I wanted everyone to think I was really healthy. So I started the blog online, called it the Earth Diet, and said for 1 year I'll only eat foods the Earth provides naturally. And so I did that and the tumor dissolved. I healed my body, boosted my immune system, and now I travel the world and I teach people how to live a natural lifestyle and also how to transform. And the main point is that you don't have to ever be stuck in being sick or having disease or feeling really unhealthy. You can transform your mind, body, and spirit. And so today on Authentic Wellness Radio, I am so excited to talk to David, and his story is really, really epic. And David and I met last year through the Hormone Summit, the online Hormone Summit, and I shared my transformation story. I was one of the speakers. And after I did that, David opened up and shared his story. And so he hasn't actually shared it yet with the world. So this is the podcast right now that David is actually going to be sharing his story. And it's quite an uncomfortable and vulnerable position for people just to share their heart out and share their story of rock bottom. But it does have valuable messages, and it also shows that the more people that can transform their life, you also can too. So you never have to just feel stuck and depressed in your situation. And so today you can start feeling better. And David has such a powerful point that bad things happen for us, not to us. So that's a really, really important thing to remember, that bad things happen for us, not to us, and they can basically put us on a path of a life that we never quite imagined or better beyond our imagination. So David is here today. David, hello.
Good morning, Liana. How are you doing? Thanks for that amazing intro.
I'm doing good. I'm in New York, so it's the evening for me. And
My bad.
No worries. So yeah, I'm so excited that this is the first time you're actually sharing fully your story of transformation. So I mean, it started for you when you were basically born, and you said that you had chronic migraines and all of the issues that come along with that. So do you want to share with everyone about the migraines that you had?
Yeah, I'd love to. Firstly, I want to say I'm absolutely terrified being on this side of the microphone, Liana. I'm usually on your end and it's much easier. I don't know how you guys do this. It's crazy. So sorry, everyone, if I'm a little bit nervous. But basically what happened to me is that I was sick. I had a very bad case of something that wasn't really that serious from pretty much when I was born until when I was 18. And I would get these ridiculous migraines. Now, a few people might know this about me, but that was something that really characterized my childhood a lot. Basically, from when I was born, my parents told me this because I used to scream as a baby, just drive them mental. Mm. I would, you know, twice a week, I would get these crippling headaches that would send me blind. I wouldn't be able to see. I was so light and sound sensitive that everyone in my house had to creep around me, which I couldn't tell everyone when I was a baby, obviously. But, you know, you can imagine what that was like when I was young. So everyone's creeping around me. They're trying not to upset me. I'd be physically ill, and I'd do that for, you know, I'd vomit for 8 or 9 hours until 3 or 4 in the morning. It was always exactly the same pattern. I'd kind of feel a bit weird at lunchtime, start getting a migraine, go home, lie in bed from 3 in the afternoon, probably until 3 in the morning, just being sick. And then I'd pass out in a pool of sweat, and I'd wake up the next morning, and I'd be totally fine. So I know that there are some people out there who are probably thinking, well, that's not that serious. But for me, you know, that was something that was pretty challenging and pretty traumatic. I know it's not anything medically significant like cancer or anything like that, but, you know, twice a week for my entire childhood, I was passing out at 3 in the morning from being physically in so much pain that I couldn't take it anymore.
So what did you do to treat the migraines?
Well, you know what the worst thing was, now that you're just talking about that, was that I was different to everyone else. So I was the sick kid. Everyone knew, oh, David's got one of his migraines again. So I was kind of treated differently, and that was a bit hard, and we'll touch on that later. But basically what I would do, there was nothing that really ever fixed this problem for me. There were a lot of things that would set migraines off for me. And you know, put yourself in a young child's position when I say this. Things like intolerances to certain food additives, chocolate. I couldn't eat chocolate for ages, Liana. It was the worst thing ever.
Oh, that is terrible.
Oh, exercise-induced stress was another thing that would give me migraines. So I'd go and play out at lunchtime on the oval with all my friends, and then I'd come inside to go to class, and all of a sudden I had a migraine. And everyone thought I was faking, because they're like, oh, you know, you just go and play out with your friends at lunch and then you don't want to go to class in the afternoon and you get a migraine. I was like, well, you know, I go and play sport on Saturday morning, which I prefer not to, but I get a migraine and then my whole Saturday's ruined, and so is my parents and so is my sisters, and it was just a nightmare. So all these kind of normal childhood things that I would really have liked to do, I kind of had to avoid, which was terrible. And that was, you know, that made things really hard for me. But the treatment, there wasn't really any treatment, but I did have this, things would kind of work and then they'd stop working, but I had this one pain-killing drug, I can't remember what it was called, but I used to spray it up my nose, and it would work pretty well. It would kind of, well, most of the time it would work pretty well. It'd kind of like 80% get rid of my migraine. It was this massively numbing, pain-killing drug. And I was thinking about this the other day. I reckon I became a little bit of a drug addict when I was like 13, because I, you know, this thing tasted so bad, but I'd spray it up my nose, and then I'd feel okay. Just like in the same way that, you know, if you walk down the street and you smell your ex's perfume or cologne, it just kind of makes you go like, ugh, that's a weird feeling. It was the exact opposite of that. Like, I'd spray this thing, taste terrible, and then I'd feel amazing. So that was this, that like that anchoring of bad taste in my nose, and I'm going to feel amazing. So I have a pretty strong feeling that I used to be addicted to pain-killing drugs when I was really, really young. And that was bad. That was a big problem that led to addictive behavior that kind of made things a little bit worse when I became an adult, I guess you could say.
Yeah, so, and how old are you now, David?
I think I'm 26. Yeah, 26.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So basically, I mean, it's very easy to become addicted to pain-killing drugs these days, especially because we get addicted to things that make us, you know, feel better. But things like pain-killing drugs, you know, they only make us feel better for a brief period of time. They don't really address the root cause of the issue. We're not taught at all at school, like, when you have bad feelings or when you're sick, you know, here's some ways how to deal with it. And so, especially with trauma, you know, I believe every human being has trauma in their life from what they've experienced, from just from being born for one, but also through the childhood and just everything that people experience. So we're not taught how to deal with trauma at school. And so a lot of people become addicted to painkillers or, you know, have all these illnesses that they're not sure why, and also become addicted to, you know, drugs, alcohol, and fast food. So I know that you had an addiction to fast food. So do you want to share a bit about that as well?
Oh, this was a bad one, Liana. So put yourself in my position as a kid. I mean, you, all the things that kids do to make themselves feel good, like they'll, you know, they'll go and run around on the oval. I couldn't do that. They'll go to friends' houses for sleepovers and whatnot. I couldn't do that, because just the anxiety of going to a friend's house and thinking, I might get a migraine tonight, and that's going to be a huge drama, because then I'm going to have to tell my friend, and then my parents are going to have to come and get me, and I'm going to be super embarrassed. I couldn't even do stuff like that. So all the normal childhood things that I would usually get pleasure from were gone. I couldn't do them. So there was one thing that really would make me feel good straight away. And I learned this from a, you know, a youngish age. And this is not my parents' fault. Like, they did a really good job of raising me and whatnot. And they didn't give me fast food all the time. But I found, hey, fast food's a treat. You go and play rugby and then you play really well and your parents take you to McDonald's. So I would go and eat McDonald's or whatever to give myself that instant gratification that I couldn't find in other areas. So it kind of, like all addictions do, it just grew and it grew and it grew until the point where I was in year 12. I'd been working at fast food restaurants since the day I was allowed to, because I was like, well, I want to earn money and I want to eat fast food. Why not just go and work at a fast food place where they'll feed me at lunch for free? So I think when I was finishing school, I was probably drinking a liter and a half of Coca-Cola a day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. And then I'd go, once I'd finished school, me and all my friends would go to the library to study for those exams and whatnot. And I wouldn't eat breakfast, so I'd have a coffee for breakfast. And then at lunchtime, me and my friends would go down to, my friends and I would go down to McDonald's and we'd eat McDonald's. And I reckon I could get through, it's funny, I wrote down something you said in the intro. You were surprised about how much food you could fit in the human body when you were a fast food addict. I'll tell you, Liana, you don't even know the half of it. I used to eat $15 worth of Macca's for lunch. And if you don't know Macca's very well, that is a seriously large amount of food. So I was doing that every single day because that was the only way for me that I'd learned that I could really go and get pleasure from something. So, I mean, food was it was the biggest thing for me that I could really relate to. And I'd always been taught as a child, hey, you've got to be careful of this food and you've got to be careful of that food, because I had intolerances that would make me sick. I couldn't eat chocolate, for example. Chocolate was something that would give me migraines. And I remember the day that I was finally declared desensitized to it and I could eat chocolate, I ate like a 16-inch chocolate cake by myself because I hadn't eaten chocolate for 10 years. So there
you're
was,
making up for it.
Yeah. So I've been things like oranges as well. I couldn't eat oranges. I couldn't eat certain food colorings. And I spent years and years trying to get myself desensitized to this stuff. And, you know, I would eat the most boring basic food because that's all my parents knew to give me that would stop me from getting sick, like white rice, chicken, apples maybe, not the green ones though because they'd make me sick, pears, broccoli, like that was my diet. And then when I was told, hey, you know, you can go and eat food and you're not going to be sick anymore, I went and just went crazy. And that addictive behavior was a huge, huge problem for me. That took, I probably, you know what, I think I started eating junk food when I was 14, when I was allowed to go and work. And then that's a habit that probably took me, I'll say, 7 or 8 years to quit. And I became a personal trainer when I was 18. So for about 3 years, I was a fast food addicted personal trainer. That's how bad this thing was. I mean, I looked the part because I was exercising and generally eating quite well. But, you know, late night trips to McDonald's and getting pizzas and all that kind of stuff were not uncommon for me when I was a personal trainer starting out. And I hope none of my early personal training clients are listening to this. If they are, I'm really sorry about that. But, you know, those kind of little things that happen when you're a child, if you don't address them straight away, this is what it can turn into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So basically, I mean, your health was a total mess and you were addicted to junk foods. And, you know, you're lucky that your lymphatic system didn't explode. So, I mean, you're so, so lucky that you didn't, you know, get a major disease like that. But I do know the seriousness of addiction, and it really does just rule your life. I mean, it just feels like you're stuck in this like black box and you can't get out. So you didn't gain like a lot of weight. Like what were the worst parts of having that addiction?
Well, I was overweight. I was never Biggest Loser size, but I was definitely overweight. The worst parts of being addicted. Well, you know, they say there's a questionnaire or something like that that you can probably find online. It's like, it's like 10 questions about addiction. And if you answer more than 7 right, you're an addict. So there are questions in there like, do you hide your addiction from your family or your friends or the people who you keep close to you? Yes, that was me. Does your addiction stop you from doing things that you would normally like to be able to do? Yes, definitely.
Yep.
Does your eating habits or the substance that you're concerned about impact on your work life? Yes, definitely.
Definitely.
Do you spend more money than you would like to on this kind of habit? Yes. Like, I
Wow.
remember when
Yep.
I first read this thing, I was like, holy crap, everything on this questionnaire is me, and I don't think I'm addicted, but I'm addicted. This questionnaire says I'm addicted. So it was a big problem. And you know what? It started with food and then it went to alcohol. So again, this is one of those things that like I never was able to get much gratification from life as a child. Couldn't go and do sleepovers with friends, couldn't do normal childhood activities, and I had this huge social anxiety as well. So one thing that I could do that would give me immediate pleasure was drink alcohol, and that started when I was 18, and that kind of snowballed and got really bad for 4 years. So you think about all those questions that I just said about addiction that I answered for fast food, that was a million times worse for alcohol. So
Wow.
most nights I'd come home from work and I'd have bourbon and coke was my drink of choice, like five or six of those most nights. And most people don't know this about me, even the people who I lived with don't know this about me. And I'd say probably at least once a week I'd be calling in sick to work the next morning. And I don't know why I did it. Like I knew, oh, I'm gonna feel terrible in the morning and I cancel all my clients to last 5 weeks in a row today, but I'm gonna drink this anyway. That's what it turned into. So I knew I wasn't a child anymore, I was an adult. But this addictive behavior and this idea of this is how I get pleasure now because I don't ever really know any other ways to get pleasure, just blossomed into this full-blown addiction. And I wouldn't have called it an addiction. I would have defended myself about it as strongly as I possibly could back in the day, but I was addicted, man. It was bad. It was not good.
Yeah, you're probably like, yeah, I'm just having fun, I'm just drinking, I'm in my early 20s, it's normal,
I'm stressed
but
out. I gotta wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock in the morning to go to work. Like, I'm stressed out. What's the problem?
right. Yeah, we could justify it in any way, but the thing about alcohol is that it totally puts us in the present moment, so we forget about all of our worries and all of our stresses. So it feels can feel really, really good in that moment, but then we have to clean up the consequences next day, and it can really create a lot of damage. Like the next day, it can last for days and days and create a lot of issues for our liver. And I mean, I can't believe how much McDonald's and Coca-Cola and alcohol that you consumed. I mean, the body is just so strong and amazing how it can just like process all of that and just not die immediately or just have a heart attack.
I know. You know what else all these things do though? They make you numb. That's what I always wanted when I was a child, was to be numb, because if I felt anything, it was anxiety or pain. That's what I went for.
Yeah, it's incredible. And addictions like this also, they create us just to be really disempowered and lazy, which also ruins our relationships at work and our romantic relationships. I mean, what happened to your relationships because of all of this addiction that was just ruling your life?
Well, again, this is something that I've had to do a lot of thinking about. Basically, I didn't ever really try at anything in school. I could never really commit to anything. I mean, I wasn't great at sport because I would get stress-induced migraines from exercise. So I didn't play sport that much. So I wasn't great at it. And I wasn't particularly brilliant in school for various reasons. People told me when I was pretty young, you're really clever and, you're way ahead of the class, like when I was in kindergarten and whatnot. And that was just because I read a lot of books. Like I was no smarter than anyone else. That's just what I did as a kid, was I read books. So when everyone else was trying to learn how to spell cat, like that was kind of not that difficult to me, but it wasn't for any reason other than I'd been reading a lot more than most children would. So what I learned was to not really try and commit to stuff and not put any effort in, because if I did, like, let's say if I wanted to go and play cricket, 5 hours in the sun, I'd be sick for 9 hours. So don't do that. Try and sign up for, an extracurricular activity. I can't think of any off the top of my head. Like chess club would be one. I liked playing chess. Can't do that because they have training at, or they practice at this time every day. And statistically, I'm going to miss that a lot of the time. So missing out and not trying were two things that were hugely important to me, because that's how I protected myself. Like if I went and really tried at this stuff, I had this thing that was holding me back, that I was sick all the time, and I would fail. So I learned, don't try, because if you do, you'll probably fail. And that made things really difficult. And from a relationship perspective, you can imagine what that does to someone. I mean, yeah, I went and studied when I left school and I went to university and all that cool kind of stuff. But imagine what it would be like being in a relationship with someone who doesn't ever really want to try at anything because they know that their whole life has told them, if you try, it's probably going to be painful. You're not going to be particularly great at it. And it's going to be very disappointing at the end. Like, what would that feel like, Liana, if you were in a relationship with someone like that?
I mean, yeah, it'd be very, very difficult, especially being in a relationship with someone who has an addiction and they're hiding, you know, that part of themselves. And yeah, I mean, as a female, that would be extremely frustrating that if the male was not trying or not doing things because they were just afraid of failure. I mean, it'd be very, very unfulfilling, and I can't imagine that many people would stick around for that. So yeah,
I don't want to name drop, but if anyone out there, or if there's someone out there who's listening to this, who's thinking he might be talking about me, I'm really, really sorry about that, because some people did stick around for way longer than they should have just because they felt bad for me. But that was basically where I was at, was that I wouldn't try anything, and they'd say, come on, you know, you got to try and get yourself together. You're not a child anymore. But to me, I was still a child who was just terrified to try anything because it would hurt if I did.
Yeah, well, and I'm excited to get soon to like your transformation and who you are now, because who you are now and who I know you as is completely different from all of this story that you're sharing. And it's really inspiring how far you've come. So, okay, one thing that we haven't touched on is the depression and anxiety that comes with all of these health issues and addiction. So do you want to touch on that you experienced through your childhood?
Not really, but I'm going to anyway, because I think it's important for people to hear, so that they know that bad things happen for us, not to us.
Mm.
Basically, from when I was very young, I was very depressed, and I didn't know why I'd been chosen to be different to everyone else. Like, the worst thing that can happen to you as a child is that you're different to everyone else. And that caused me huge anxiety. And I was also in a state of fear because I didn't know what I would be able to do or not do that would make me tremendously sick. So I was anxious about everything. And I was depressed about the fact that that I couldn't do anything. And it was bad. You know, I had a really happy childhood. Like, my parents were awesome and I lived in a nice house and they sent me to a nice school and they fed me good food and all that kind of stuff, but I was still different to everyone else. And the worst thing was that even though I read all these books and I liked writing and that was my thing, I didn't really know how to explain that because no one else was on the same level as me, right? So I didn't want to be judged in any way for being emotionally different to everyone else, physically different to everyone else, not being able to do the same things as everyone else, because when you go to school, that's what happens, is that you get judged. So you get a grade every time you do a thing, like a test or whatever. You get a grade at the end of every semester. You go out to play sport and someone wins, someone loses. I don't know if they used to do this at your school, Liana, but we'd go out and play rugby at our school and there'd be the two fittest kids, and I can picture them right now. One of them lives behind me still, actually. And they'd be like the team captains, and they'd pick teams, like they'd go, you pick someone, and then I'll pick someone, and then you pick someone, and everyone hated being the last person.
Yes, except that's anxiety for kids. Oh yeah.
No one ever had to worry about being the last person because that was always me.
Oh, which is, no.
I know, because I never got to go and do physical activity, so I was like super unfit. So why would you ever want to pick this kid who never gets to exercise? He's just going to be slow.
You felt unwanted, rejected, completely outcast, different. I mean, that's the worst feeling when you're a kid.
Yeah, but like, fair enough, I wouldn't have picked me either, but you know, that's just what happens when you're in school, and most people don't think that's a particularly big deal. But how do you go and explain that to someone when you're 9 years old? Like, what do you say?
Yeah, well, we're not taught. That's what that goes back to in school. We're not taught how to deal with depression or trauma or anxiety, so we don't know how to express that, and kids definitely don't know how to express that.
And that's something that stuck with me for a really, really long time. That took years and years and years to get rid of. It was super challenging. So I felt inferior to everyone else, basically, is the best way that I could describe it. And I was on these super high dose antidepressants, which was just mental. You know what I found out a couple of years ago, Liana? I was at the doctor for whatever reason, and it was a different doctor, and they're flicking through my file, and they said, oh, do you still take this drug? And I said, no. Do you still take this drug? And I said, no. And she said, hang on. And she's reading the other doctor's notes, like my usual doctor. I think this must have been 4 or 5 years ago. And she said, were you taking these both at the same time? I said, yeah. She said, so you're on this massively high dose antidepressant. Yeah. And you were taking this stuff for your migraine. And I said, yeah. And she said, okay. That's... And she just kind of stopped. I was like, what's the problem? And she said, oh, you probably shouldn't have been taking those together. So I went home and I went home and Googled it. And one of the side effects of taking those two medications together is death.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's crazy. Like you type in Zoloft and I think it was Imogran. And you can do this if you're listening at home. Those were the two drugs that I was on into Google. Mm. And it's like a big red, like frowny face pops up. And it's like, hey, don't do that. That's a really bad idea because you could die. And that's what I was on for about 10 years. So these... You know, I was getting medicated for everything. None of my friends were getting medicated because prescription medicine was nowhere near as common back then. And I didn't want people to know that I was different to them. So that's the mm-hmm. biggest point that I want people to take away from this, is that children don't necessarily always know how to talk about what they're feeling or that it's safe to talk about it, because we're always judging children as being good or bad at something in school. It's like, hey, this grade's not doing that well. Work a little bit harder at that. Or, yeah, you're so great at this. And... because we spend more time at school as children than with our parents, that's just the expectation of judgment just kind of comes around there. So that's another thing that led me to kind of not really commit myself, which was a huge theme, not committing myself when I became an adult. I just didn't want to try it anything because I'd been judged so much in every single area at school, which is fine. But because I was so different to everyone else in every way possible, I was found to be inferior. So massively depressed about that, as you can imagine.
And it's also dangerous to put kids on antidepressants and medications like that, because it shows them like you are different and you have a problem and, you know, you need to fix this and this pill is going to fix it. And I don't think kids quite understand why or how. And, you know, if you look at the ingredients in these pharmaceutical drugs, and this is ties into the work I do with the Earth Diet, is that if you look at the ingredients of these antidepressants or anxiety pills, and you really research what is it made from, they're made from genetically modified organisms that are created in labs. So it's complete chemicals. And so the doctors have this approach thinking that they can fix and heal the body with these chemicals, whereas that never addresses the root cause of it. And so if you just take care of the nutrition part and just make sure you're eating so clean, you know, Earth Diet style, and you're getting all the nutrition that you need, because most of us are nutritionally deprived, and so we're not getting all those minerals and vitamins we need for our brain, so it throws our whole chemistry off. So if people are just eating a lot of real, whole, organic, fresh foods, juices, smoothies every single day, you know, then you know, okay, my health is taken care of, so now I'm going to work on the mind part or the spirit part. And so all the healing all kind of comes in together. So, David, before you share your...
One more thing, Liana, I want to add another thing to that. Okay. Stress. Stress. Mm. That's a huge thing. My migraines went away when I left school.
Yeah, so school basically just really stressed you out. And some kids, it does affect a lot more. Some kids, it just completely... stresses out. And yeah, stress left in the body for too long causes all kinds of disease and addiction, depression, anxiety. So before you share what you did to get out of it and your transformation, is there anything else really bad or any symptoms that you had or anything that you did that was just, you know, really, just really disempowering that you want to share?
Yes. I can think of one day when this was probably my rock bottom, and you and I were talking about this before the show, and we were saying, you know, it's bad when we see children who are overweight or people who are overweight, because we know that at some point they're going to have to hit rock bottom. Like, you and I know that because you've been there, you shared your story, which I love hearing your story. I've been there. I don't like telling my story, but you know, you have to hit rock bottom, and people need to decide where that is. Like, is that meeting a stranger underneath a bridge at 3 in the morning to, you know, buy drugs off them? Or is that something a little bit less sinister? So for me, I remember it very clearly. I was standing in the bathroom in my parents' house, and it was probably 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't know what I'd been doing, but I looked at myself, overweight, very sad, very unhappy. Really, there was no, like, I felt like I didn't have a place in the world. And I thought to myself, you know what? Like, you're different to everyone else. You're in, you know, physically, you're inferior to everyone else. And that's just the way it's gone. All the way through high school and finishing school and all that kind of stuff, you've never really been on the same level as everyone else. You've never been able to talk to girls as well as everyone else. You've never been one of the cool kids at school. You've never been particularly sporty. There's kind of nothing remarkable about you. This is me talking to myself.
Wow.
But I thought, you know what? That's okay. There's probably still a place in the world for people like you. That was a thought that went into my head. I was probably 19. Mm-hmm. Maybe 18. I'll say 18. That was what I thought to myself. Like, what a terrible thing to say about yourself in your own head. How crazy is that? You're inferior to everyone else, but that's cool. There's still a place in the world for you. Like, that was my rock bottom. So,
wow.
That's about as sad and depressed as you can possibly get, I think. And I've never really told anyone this. I mean, I'm doing this, all the work that I'm doing at the moment into helping children with obesity problems. I'm kind of remembering a lot of things about my past that I'd forgotten. Like, you can ask me a lot of stuff about my childhood, and I genuinely don't remember. A lot of the stuff that I've spoken about today has only come around because people have been asking me questions, and I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that. But I, you know, most of this stuff is just repressed in my head. So there's little old me, overweight, sad, nothing really going for me, staring at myself in the mirror saying, you're not as good as everyone else, but that's okay, dude. What a moment.
Yeah. What a moment. It's very disempowering for any human that, you know, looks in the mirror and thinks, I'm less than everyone. And that's why you and I, you know, share our transformation stories, because we want anyone listening that just feels completely disempowered, like, I don't matter, you know, I'm less than everyone else. No, we're all humans, and we all have an equal opportunity. And the opportunity is a choice from moment to moment to moment. And we can change our choices, as hard as it might seem in the beginning, but we can change our choices to transform our lives and become unrecognizable to our old self. And we create a new self. And that's a whole spirit or soul evolution that a lot of people are having to go through. And usually it is a sickness or a rock bottom moment that forces us to go in that new direction. And for me, my rock bottom was when I was in hospital and I was sitting there just hearing the results from the doctor that I had this golf ball sized tumor in my throat. And I was 21 years old and I wasn't doing what I really wanted to do in life. And for me, that was my turning point. And so, David, so
it's
then...
It's a scary moment, right? Because you know, like, we knew, you and I, when we were younger, like, don't drink soft drink all the time. Like, that's a bad idea. Like, seriously, don't go and eat Maccas every single day. That's a bad idea. But then you get this moment where it's like, oh, okay, that's actually made a bit of a problem for me. That's a scary, scary moment.
Yes, to look back at our choices and think, all of this has happened and I'm where I am today because of me and the choices I made. Even if bad things happen to people from other people, still we have a choice in how we can react to that. So at the end of the day, only we can get ourselves out of it. It's such a realization. So, David, okay, what did you do to get out of it? So let's now focus on like what you did for actions and how you transformed. Because you're completely different today. So I know you as this powerhouse in the health industry that brings all these like really empowered, healthy, influential leaders around the world together to do the summit. And the Hormone Summit last year was so, so successful. And now the Obesity Summit's coming up, which is really, really exciting. So the Childhood Obesity Summit. And I'm very excited to be a speaker on that and share some of my recipes to accelerate weight loss. And so, you know, I see you as this healthy, influential person who brings together people and you're confident and empowered. And, you know, I would never have guessed that you went through all of this in your childhood. So you've completely just transformed. So like, yeah, share all of that.
I should have made you promise not to make me blush before this show. Damn you, Liana. Well,
you deserve it though.
I don't want to make myself sound like I'm special or, you know, I have some magic recipe to transform your life, because I don't. Honestly, I just learned all this kind of stuff from other people. Like, this isn't what, you know, what I'm about to say isn't a product of me sitting in my room planning out my life transformation strategy or anything like that. Like I told you earlier, I like to read books. So I read books. I read a lot of books. And when I was in school, they were books about history, or, you know, I used to study ancient Greece because my favorite teacher was my history teacher and he was Greek and that's what we used to study. And I used to read about business because I thought that was cool and that's what I wanted to do. And then I left school and I had all this free time on my hands. So I started reading about sports heroes of mine who'd overcome challenges in their life. This weight loss thing was a real big challenge to me. And there was a point where I realized, and I think everyone kind of needs to get to this point, hey, I've done everything that I'm unhappy about to myself, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, I don't feel bad. That doesn't make me a bad person. But I was totally in control of everything that led me to this point. And if you're going to change, I think you need to get that realization into your own consciousness, but in a cool way, like not being harsh on yourself, like, oh, this is so stupid, I shouldn't have done this, and why did I go and eat that? I think that was where things started to turn around for me. So I went and started reading, and we'll talk about reading in a second, because that's a, like, I'm a huge reading fan, but just by focusing my attention towards the things that I wanted and the things that I didn't want, that's where change started to happen. So I would read diet books, and I don't like diet books, but I didn't know I didn't like diet books back then. And I'd read books or stories about people who had overcome challenges. I wish I could think of some names of some books of some people who I looked up to, but off the top of my head, I can't. But
so it was basically books that you were attracted to at the time that were helping you, making you feel better, immersing you into this new world, this new realm.
Yeah, because I was upset about myself, but eventually I realized if I have the power to do this to myself, like make myself so sick and unhappy, then I must have the power to make myself not sick and unhappy, because no one else that I know is like me. And they do things differently to me. So maybe if I do things differently to how I'm doing it now, I'll be more like them. That was what I wanted. So a huge part of it for me was just changing my consciousness to look for things that I could do that would give me what I really wanted. So I knew that eating McDonald's wasn't getting me any closer towards my goal. Like, I knew that. Everyone knows that. No one goes and sits down at McDonald's and thinks, wow, this is a great idea, I'm really happy that I'm here. Like, no one does that. So I had to be really honest with myself and think, is this actually going to give me what I want? And for anyone out there who's listening, like, you know that there are things that you do that aren't going to give you what you want or give you what you don't want. And you know that there are things that you can do that will give you what you want. Like, most of what I do as a personal trainer is just around coaching people. I mean, people know that they're not supposed to eat bad things and drink so much, and they're supposed to drink water and go to bed earlier. And like, everyone knows that kind of stuff, but it's my job to help them do that, which is
actually do it, implement it. Yeah.
So taking a step back and just being totally objective and saying, this is not working for me, what I'm doing right now. And it's a challenge to get away from those things because, like I said, these are habits that I'd had since I was probably as early as 9, just gratifying myself by doing things like eating junk food or whatever, because that was the only way that I could feel good. So I had to break that cycle, which was hugely challenging. And I had to come up with something that I wanted more than that instant gratification, so I wouldn't want to go and eat that kind of junk food. So for me, it was just, I want to be normal. That's all I wanted, was just to be like everyone else. I don't want to be the sick kid anymore. I don't want to be the kid who you can't invite around to hang out because his parents left to come and get him because he's sick. I don't want to be the kid who can't play sport.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be the kid who has to choose to not go on school camps or school sport days or anything like that. I don't want to be the kid who people look at and think, that's the fat kid. Like, everyone remembers the fat kid in school. That was kind of me. I don't want to be that kid. I don't want to be different to everyone else. That's what I wanted so badly. And changing my actions came when I just kept that at the front of my mind all the time. And it took me, like I said, it took me years to do. And it's a process, not an outcome. Like, I never got to the finish line and said, yay, I haven't eaten Macca's in 3 months, that's it, I'm finished. Like, you really need to invest in the fact that this is a process, not something that you ever finish. But, yeah, that's what happens. So, there are some people out there who are really, like, they know this kind of stuff. I'm kind of just talking from my own experience, and I don't really get what I'm talking about right now, I think. But there are people out there like Brian Tracy's and the Tony Robbins's and the Zig Ziglar's of the world who really get what it takes to change. And so I started reading their books. And that for me was life-changing because, I mean, I think the quote that Brian Tracy says just sums up my belief about what it takes to change so well. And he says, you are the average of the five people that you spend the most time around. And that could also be you are the average of the five things that you think about the most. So if all you're thinking about is, oh, well, I really, really, really want to be healthy and normal, then your actions eventually are going to align themselves towards that. If you sit down and think about that every single day, eventually something has to change. So that's what I found, was just shifting my mindset was hugely beneficial. Not being hard on myself when I slipped up, which I did for years. It took me so long to finally kick my addictions and to get off all those prescription drugs and stuff, which I didn't do the safe way. So please, no one listening to this, just stop taking your medicine like I did, because that was crazy what happened when I did that. But it was a mindset shift thing.
For me, it was a shift.
Yeah. Just by studying and thinking about and getting exposed to these people who were saying, you know what, you can be better. And it's kind of hard, but it's also easy because it makes you feel better every step along the way. Like, you wouldn't be reading my book right now if you didn't hate something about your life or something about your life didn't suck. And that's great, because now you've got a reason to want to change. So that is how I kind of pulled myself out of that slump. And by looking at all the people around me who I looked up to and noticing all the things that they were doing that was different to me. So yeah, my friends and I would go and eat Macca's every now and again, but I was the only one who'd eat Macca's every single day. I noticed that. I didn't make myself feel bad about it, but I just thought, well, if I want to be a little bit more like everyone else, maybe it's not such a good idea for me to do things that no one else does, like going in McDonald's and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, good point. And so the realization for you and that internal shift was when you were looking in the mirror thinking, if I'd created all this sickness and I've done this to myself and created an unhealthy and unhappy life, that, oh, maybe I can also change it and create a healthy and happy life for yourself. And then once you had that internal shift, then you started doing actions that were in aligned with that. And it, for people out there that haven't had that internal shift yet, we've both been where you are, and it's completely frustrating and disempowering. And I mean, people,
yeah, it sucks.
It sucks. Like, you, I understand, like, people want to die, and I understand why people, you know, kill themselves, because they think there's no other option than just to do that. But once
it sounds, you like, get a big statement, by the way, what Liana just said, for everyone out there listening, but I get it as well. I totally get what you just said.
Yeah, if you have depression yourself, or you know someone with depression, you know, that's the feeling. It's like, I don't know what else to do. I think, you know, if ending my life is kind of the only way to make myself feel better, that's, you know, that's a choice. But there,
well, think about this, Liana. What happens? What do you feel when you end your life? What do you feel when you're dead?
Well, I mean, that's a whole nother podcast.
Well, you think you'll feel nothing, right? And what did you and I spend our whole childhoods doing? Numbing ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely would feel, you wouldn't feel the pain of having the physical body anymore, that's for sure. But the point is here is you have a choice to have that internal shift of thinking, okay, you know, because that's what happened to me when I was in hospital. For the past 5 years, and I look back and I think, wow, for the past 5 years, I did this to myself. I poisoned my body every single day. I deprived my body of nutrition and proper nourishment and love and care. And I did that to myself. And now I'm going to fix it. I'm going to actually put nourishment and nutrition and love back into my body. And so once you take that control that you are in control through your choices, you can change it. Then you can transform like David and I did. And now we both live really happy, healthy lives that we're we're proud of, but it is a process and it's continuous. You know, if I went back to eating junk food, I would be back in the slump again. And that's why the Earth Diet really is a great access for all of us to have a consistently healthy life. And the idea is just to eat whatever we're craving, but in the most natural way possible, so that we don't have all that guilt and depression attached to our choices. David, your story is so amazing. I mean, you overcame depression, anxiety, you know, the excess weight and addiction to alcohol and junk foods, and also addiction to painkillers. And yep. So that's so, so inspiring for all the people out there listening that are dealing with those things right now. So,
hey, Liana, I know you're the interviewer here, but I got a question for you.
Sure.
Do you regret what happened to you?
I don't, actually, because where I am today is mind-blowing, and I have peace around food. I'm free of addiction to junk food. I don't even crave junk foods anymore. If I look at junk food, I just think, ew, it doesn't resonate with me, and I never knew that I could get to that point. I thought I was trapped in an addiction forever, and so every day I'm so grateful for my health and my body. I love my body more than I ever have. I'm really confident in it, and all the excess weight just dropped, and I'm at my natural state. So no, I don't regret it, but obviously at the time, I regretted every hour that I was felt like I was suffering. So,
yeah.
But once you get out of it, it's like, oh, you know, everything was worth it. But listening to stories like that, I know when you're in it, you're just thinking, yeah, okay, you don't know how much I'm suffering. Yes. But once you're out of it, you're grateful because it takes you to a new level.
I think if I made this statement, tell me if you think, as someone who's been to pretty bad places, if you agree or disagree. One thing I've learned is that you kind of really need to be young and stupid and unhealthy and unhappy and insecure and anxious before you can be old and wise and happy and confident about yourself. And for some people, maybe that's not true, but for other people, I really think you need to learn what you don't like and what you don't want, and figure out what it is that makes you feel bad before you can learn what it is that makes you feel good. Would you agree or disagree?
Well, I would say that sums up the entire human experience, and majority of people need to hit a rock bottom or experience this extreme contrast of pain and suffering before they surrender to another possible way of living. And it's very common. A lot of humans do. That's why I'm so passionate about speaking to kids and going to schools, because I say, you know, you have a choice. Make healthy choices. If you make the choices I made, you'll hit a rock bottom. You'll feel really unhealthy, and then you'll just have to do more work to clean it up. Whereas if you can achieve living a consistently healthy, even skill life for the rest of your life, then you know, you're much better off. But for some reason, we have this human desire and this nature of us where we sabotage and we're not disciplined. And so we put ourselves through all this stress and drama. But once we've had enough of the suffering, then we fully surrender and create a really healthy life for ourselves.
I hope that's the takeaway point that everyone gets from this. And that's what I really wanted to do this podcast for, is that bad things happen for us. They don't happen to us.
That's so empowering, so empowering. And it only forces us to go within and become more strong within ourselves and more confident and, you know, connect to, I mean, spirit is a big part of it, mind, body, spirit, to connect to your spirituality, whether it's God, source, universe. But there's got to be that connection there where you feel supported and loved by something greater than just human beings. And that's also very helpful. And David, did you experience that whole mind-body-spirit connection in your transformation?
I think so. I think there was a point where everything just became, it became easier to change than to struggle with not changing. And I feel like that was where everything just kind of got in sync. That's what I think anyway.
Everything in sync. Yeah. So, and what I learned once I transformed was that health is meant to be easy and it's meant to be flowing. And before I transformed, you know, using the Earth Diet, I health was really hard, and I was obsessed with being skinny and how I looked, and it was just never good enough, and it was just really hard to stay away from junk foods, whereas now health is easy, and so it is a process. But once you make that internal shift, and then actions start showing up, and you can start making choices, and it is a process, right, David? It takes years and years and years.
That's the most valuable thing you can learn, is that there isn't really a finish line. It's just how hard can you put yourself into the journey that will determine how successful you are.
It's a lifelong journey. I look at this like for the rest of my life, I'll be always, you know, making choices of upgrading and just growing and just get healthier and healthier, mind, body, spirit. So it's
Which
a
some
lifelong
people, you
journey.
Know what? If you'd said this to me 10 years ago, like it's a journey and there's no finish line, I would have said, well, I don't want anything to do with it then. I would have had to say to myself, listen, yeah, there'll be a time where you look in the mirror and you'll go, yay, I look much better than I used to, and I'd be happy to take my shirt off in front of people now and whatever, but are you seriously saying no to a journey where you feel better every single day based on the actions that you take compared to where you were yesterday? Like, do you actually think that that's not going to make a difference to feel better every single day, which is what happens when you get fully invested in the journey and the process? So I would have had to kind of sell young David on that a little bit, but I'm sure I would have been able to get him. I'm sure I would have been able to get him on board.
Yeah. Amazing, David. Is there anything else you want to share about your story?
You know what? I think I've already shared a lot more than I'm comfortable talking about, but you managed to get it out of me, so thank you for that. But I mean, I don't want people to think that I'm special or different in any particular way. I didn't want people to think I was special or different in any particular way when I was younger. But, you know, there are people out there who can help and who get it and who've been to places where you are. Like, one thing I always tell myself is that no matter what problem I've got, someone's been through it and there's probably a book written about it that I can learn from. That's just like a weird little motto that I've got for myself. But I really believe there are people out there who've been through what you've been through, no matter what it is, no matter how bad it is. And people try and tell themselves like, oh, I'm special, I'm different, my circumstances are unique. Like, I tried to do that to myself. I bet you did as well, Liana. And it's not true. Maybe it's not me, maybe it's not Liana, but someone out there knows what you're going through and knows that there is a way through it.
Yes, I always thought that I was the only one going through what I went through. I thought I was so weird and so strange. What's wrong with me that I crave junk food every day? And every day I would wake up and tell myself, this is the last day. I'm not going to eat junk foods ever again. And then I would crave junk foods and I had no control, didn't even try and battle the thought process. So I would just go out and eat the junk food. And I really thought the junk food just controlled me. Like, I was not in control of it at all. And I thought, wow, like, what's wrong with me? And so that's why I did not tell anyone. So nobody knew for 5 years that I was addicted. And then when I started the Earth Diet after, you know, I was in hospital, I wrote online and I just put it all out there and I declared, you know, I binge eat on junk foods. I overeat. I emotional eat. I've done this every day for 5 years. And I got so much response back, David. People like, oh my God, I do the same thing. Wow, my story is exactly the same. And I'm like, really? There's other people out there who are suffering with the same thing I'm suffering with. And now I think that's crazy because there's so many of us suffering of the same things. It's just we don't really talk about it. So there is somebody out there who's going through what you're going through. A lot of people, you know, we're all in the same boat. We all experience the same kind of human emotions. So people do understand and people do relate, which can help you to get through it. So we created this kind of support network online through the Earth Diet community. And it's like, okay, then, you know, this is more of a normal thing. And so we kind of all breaking those cycles together so we can just live a really happy and healthy life.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, David, I want to thank you so much for sharing your story of rock bottom and transformation with everyone. And you're completely inspiring to everyone listening and to myself and people that are going through the same thing that you went through. I'm going to refer them to listen to this podcast. And you can check out the archives for it at theearthdiet.com as well. And also, I just wanted to give a huge shout out for the upcoming summit that we're doing. So the childobesityproject.com. Tune into that. There's a lot of great speakers speaking about how to break addiction and also child obesity. So if you know anyone who has obesity or any children that you can kind of see that they're making, you know, bad choices with their eating, then tune into that. So the childobesityproject.com. David, thank you so much again. And is there any last words from you?
Just thank you, Liana, for guest hosting my show. You were actually my second choice. I wanted my mum to do this, but she was way too nervous. So I thought, who else can I talk to that would probably know my story better than just about anyone? And your name popped up in my head, and I thought, yeah, I think Liana kind of gets this. So thanks a lot for sharing your time with me. And, you know, this has probably been one of my favorite podcasts that I've done. I was nervous as hell being on this side of the microphone. I've just decided now I don't like being on this side of the microphone, so I'm going to go back to your side as soon as I possibly can. But thank you a lot for helping me get that out.
Yeah, you're so welcome. I think we did a great service to helping a lot of people. So thank you for sharing. And I'm honored to be the first time you're sharing this story. So thank you, David.
Thanks, Liana. Have a good day.
Authentic Wellness Radio.